layoffs. Both international longshoremen's unions have issued harsh rebukes of the tariffs, which, as one said, quote, don't put America first, they put American working people last. And American scientists are on the trading block. The Trump Doge team's firings of federal and university scientists and researchers have given the European Union an unexpected opportunity to hire them away. Third, new investments in U.S. manufacturing, such as from IBM and Taiwan Semiconductor, are mostly promises that we've heard before. The New York Times reported a different picture. Investors have grown increasingly wary of Trump's policies in recent months, with stocks, bonds, and the dollar all showing signs of weakness as fund managers fret over the uncertainty surrounding Trump's policymaking approach. The International Monetary Fund has sharply downgraded its outlook for the U.S. economy. In short, except for the super rich, there is no golden era, only hard times. And Trump cannot disguise that fact. He is making fewer grandiose promises and urging more caution, talking about a transition to better times, hinting that a recession might happen. But he cannot hide disastrous decision-making that will cost the Republicans dearly. I'm Mel Gertow for the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, May 27th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Lexis Ponce, Josh Salem, and Mel Gertov. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonio Gonzalez, Alex Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Hannah Francis. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. Today on News in Depth, we're going to talk about two events happening this week in Portland for Palestine solidarity, as the Israeli assault on the civilian population of the Gaza Strip continues with daily and nightly bombardments of civilian areas. People around the world have organized events in solidarity with the besieged Palestinian population. Here in Portland, two of the upcoming events this week will be a showing of the new film, The Palestine Exception, which is co-produced by KBOO host Jan Hocken, and a night of music and comedy featuring the local group Sepharin and the internationally known Palestinian-American comedian Amr Zahar. Both events are fundraisers for Gaza. The film, The Palestine Exception, will be shown at the Clinton Street Theater this Thursday, May 29th at 7 p.m. Here's an interview I did recently with the filmmaker, Jan Hocken. We are very pleased to be joined today by Jan Hocken, who is a former nurse, psychology professor. Jan works as a documentary filmmaker and a radio programmer on the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Community Radio, and has just put out a film called The Palestine Exception. Thank you for joining us, Jan Hocken.
Good to be here, Jenka.
And I want to just start with what is The Palestine Exception? What does that refer to?
Well, the The term itself, I think, initially was coined by Palestine Legal, a group that's been very active and remains active in providing legal advice and counsel to students, workers, faculty, and other and groups that have been targeted for their Justice for Palestine work. And the term refers to particularly groups that generally support liberal causes or social justice causes, gay rights, queer, gender justice, racial justice, but who have been historically pro-Israel and dominated of course, the Democratic Party, as we saw throughout the campaign of Biden and then Harris, really shut down what we show in the film to be the largest anti-war movement since the 1970s, continue to arm Israel and to insist that this was the one genocide, the one they wouldn't use that term, but internationally, what Israel's doing is recognized as a genocide that has been met with and continues to be met with silence, even by liberals in the US.
I just want to play the Republican Congress member from New York, Elise Stefanik, grilling the academics, the presidents of three major universities about people calling for a genocide of the Jews. And that apparently turned out to be someone in Los Angeles mishearing a chant.
Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
It depends on the context.
It does not depend on the context. The answer is yes, and this is why you should resign. These are unacceptable answers across the board.
The line of questions kept coming back to calls for Jewish genocide that actually nobody had made. I remember because it started at UCLA. Headline in the magazine report was students at UCLA chant for Jewish genocide. I remember thinking, wait, whoa, I was there. That's not what they were saying. I remember hearing it with my own ears. And I thought, what if they doctored the audio? What's going on here? And you hit play and you hear, we charge you with genocide. To give them the benefit of the doubt, somebody misheard that. And then in their own minds, it became, we want Jewish genocide, which then gets fed via various lobbying organizations, because that's how our political system functions, to the various Republican, representatives on that committee who were castigating those university presidents.
And can you just tell a little bit of that background? Because that's one of the many things that have been kind of misconstrued or misrepresented about the protests and about the people protesting.
Well, one of the repressive tactics of authoritarian or right-wing movements, and certainly we see this with the Trump administration, but also with Israeli propaganda around their war on Gaza and the ongoing Nakba, is to kind of project outward what you're really about. So to accuse activists of calling for genocide, it's a rhetorical ploy because it reverses what's happening. And so we wanted to show a bit about how a discursive element or a rhetorical claim gets kind of picked up and distorted. And, that's a longstanding slogan in movements to say we charge you with genocide. Israel has been correctly charged at rallies with genocide, but then it gets picked up by, in this case, AIPAC and the Republican Congressional Committee that was driving a lot of this interrogation of presidents of universities saying students are calling for genocide, even though no one had heard that. And so we wanted to show some of how these claims, how they originate, how they get distorted, and how something you're doing gets projected onto the opposition.
Some of the people in your film talk about this, particularly the professor from the Yeshiva University, about the McCarthyism that she and others experienced in the 60s and 70s.
And it's going on today as well. This scenario of capitulation to outrageous student demands on the part of weak-willed liberal administrators. So it's just like Elise Stefanik asking about genocide and saying, you have to crack down.
I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. What is McCarthyism and how are we seeing it play out, both in the Biden administration and now in the Trump administration?
The term neo-McCarthyism or the new McCarthyism has been attached to the crackdown on Justice for Palestine activism on campuses since the start of this project, late fall of 2023. And it's both a useful historical comparison. Some say it's the most useful one we have at hand in comparing what's happening now, what's been intensified under Trump with cracking down and threatening with deportation, arrests, kind of random picking up people in a way of silencing protests, opposition, creating an external enemy that then becomes not just the external enemy, but the idea of the enemy within. So with McCarthyism, there was a paranoia about communists who were the evil enemy after World War II. And of course, the social movements in the left more generally, the labor movement, the civil rights movement that emerged, were silenced. And many people did lose their jobs. Many people were blacklisted, some permanently, some temporarily. We're most familiar with the McCarthyism as it affected Hollywood, which was emerging, you know, as a cultural center. I think people are less aware of McCarthyism as it affected academia. So that's part, you know, that's our central story, is about the university as a setting of knowledge production, of that the state and capitalism depends on the production of knowledge, research, and skills that are central to the functioning of the society. But it's also been a site of protest historically, resistance, critical thinking, and the repression of movements as well.
And now we've seen this massive crackdown on the student protests. There are now these attempts by the Trump administration to deport certain student leaders. And I wanted to hear your perspective on this as someone who's been covering this for the last year and a half, especially the case of Mahmoud Khalil from Columbia University, who I believe has a Palestinian passport. So with Palestinians having no state, living under this brutal military occupation with U.S. support, where would a Palestinian American get deported to? Or will it be like Mo in the Netflix series where Mohammed Amr's character gets deported, but as a Palestinian has to stay in Texas with an ankle bracelet because the U.S. won't send him back to Palestine?
The fantasy land of Trump, send him to Alcatraz. He's languishing now in Louisiana, and there are, there's a film called The Encampments that does feature him and feature the encampments primarily at Columbia. But there's a mix of people, the most vulnerable being immigrants and particularly people who've been involved in the Justice for Palestine movement as activists, that are being picked up, some in a kind of limbo status in Louisiana, some have fled the country. But I think the aim here is to, terrorize people into silence. And the film kind of opens with, we'll see what happens, whether people can be bludgeoned into silence. But Sri Makdisi, who is the nephew of Edward Said, featured in the film, and Palestinian scholar at UCLA, said, but the genie can't be put back in the bottle.
Young people are able to see through the aspects of America's own repressed history, and they've also been able to translate their awareness of American history to these other contexts, including the one in Palestine. But the other thing that's really important is that increasingly in America, there's a growing sense that the struggle for Palestine is kind of connected to other struggles taking place in the U.S., above all, the indigenous land movement.
When South Africa was an apartheid regime, the United States supported them for a while. Israel supported them for a while. No. The United States will support fascism by any means necessary while claiming to be the protector of democracy. That's the largest open-air prison in the world, the longest-lasting one. Does that look like democracy?
No! And I think it's little wonder that a lot of this awareness comes through the experience on college campuses. That's where people learn about these histories. That's where people learn to connect the dots between these different histories. And college campuses are precisely the sites that right-wing American politicians and Zionists want to shut down, because people who learn aren't going to go on saying the same things that their parents or grandparents used to say. They're no longer going to toe the line. They're no longer going to just repeat the liberal mantras about Israel being a Jewish and democratic state. They're going to start asking, what does it mean to be a Jewish and democratic state, given that half the people that it rules over are not Jewish? How can it be a democratic state?
This movement has shaken things up for Israel, that has had to shed its the righteous robe of protectiveness toward, you know, that they exist as a protection for Jews worldwide, that they're a democracy, that they're having to always defend themselves from hostile players among the Palestinians. And I think a lot of that has been debunked, and we try to show in the film some of that history that's been repressed. The lessons are not to commit genocide, that there is a moral call to say never again, never, and certainly never again in our name, as Israel continues to do in the name of Jews.
That was an interview with Jan Hocken about her new film, The Palestine Exception. You can watch the film in its entirety this Thursday, May 29th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, located at Southeast 26th and Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at their website, cstpdx.com. That's cstpdx.com. Also this weekend in Portland, another event for Palestine is being held. A benefit concert for the people of Gaza will take place Friday, May 30th, 2025 at 7:30 p.m. Doors will open at 6:30 p.m. This event will be held at the First Unitarian Church, located at 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. This concert and comedy session will feature the local band Sepharin and the world-renowned comedian Amr Zaher. Here's a clip of Amr Zaher's comedy.
Hey everyone, it's Amr Zaher. And for white people, that's Amr Zahar. And for the American media, that's uncivilized. We have all witnessed the Russian invasion of Ukraine unfolding in front of our eyes. The American and European media have detailed the Ukrainian people's suffering. Ukrainians are brave, steadfast, and heroic for resisting invasion and occupation by any means necessary, including with Molotov cocktails. Their grandmothers are depicted as courageous wartime field generals.
This is where they make the Molotov cocktails. Російська наволочка
сюди приїжджає. Let those Russian shits come here, she says.
Good for you, Granny.
How did you learn how to make Molotov cocktails?
You Googled it.
Of course, she says.
Wait, white people are not to Google how to make a Molotov cocktail? That's awesome. Oh, and unlike us Arabs, these Ukrainians are blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and civilized.
But this isn't a place, with all due respect, you know, like Iraq or Afghanistan. You know, this is a relatively civilized.
Now, the hypocrisy, duplicity, deceit, and whiteness of it all is just too much to respond to with any level of politeness. But I'm going to try to address it all with civility, courtesy, and respect. No, I'm not. You think we're uncivilized? Since the beginning of the 20th century until today, when we've had modern warfare tactics, the white world has killed exponentially more people than the uncivilized brown world. 20 million in World War I, 60 million in World War II. Pretty civilized. Was it civilized to drop an atomic bomb on Japanese civilians in Hiroshima, killing 80,000 people instantly, 30% of that city's population, ravaging future generations, and then knowing all that mass destruction and murder, doing the same thing in Nagasaki 3 days later? Are we really going to be lectured about civility by a society that, upon invading this land of America, promptly massacred the natives, stole their land, expelled the rest of them, and then has the audacity to name its new states after the people they stole it from? Who do we steal this one from? They call themselves Dakota. Okay, cool, but there's a lot of land here. Yeah, you're right. We'll do a north and a south. Very civilized. I'm definitely not going to be lectured about civility by society that, upon arriving on the shores of America in the early 1600s, immediately started enslaving black people, did that for 150 years, then wrote a declaration and a bill of rights that said all men are created equal, then kept enslaving black people for another 100 years, then killed 600,000 of each other over whether or not slavery was a good idea, then raised statues of the people who thought it was a good idea, then implemented segregationist Jim Crow laws for another 100 years, and today still kills unarmed black people in the streets and crowdfunds to defend the murderers. I mean, give me a break. I'm gonna listen about civility from people who made up a war to invade Iraq. I mean, they lied about it, and we know they lied about it. 5,000 American soldiers needlessly died. 1 million Iraqis died. They burned and bombed libraries. They destroyed a civilization. But as far as your racism and double standards go, I just want to say, in the most civilized manner I can muster, fuck off. Thanks for watching.
That was comedian Amr Zahar. For more about this event, local activist Rami spoke with one of the organizers.
We've got something powerful coming to Portland this week, an evening of music, comedy, and solidarity on Friday, May 30th at 7:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church. It's more than a performance. It's a stand for justice and humanity. All proceeds will go to the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, providing life-saving medical care to children injured in Gaza. Today, I'm joined by Sean Barghouti of the Jewish-Palestinian Alliance of Oregon and member of the organizing committee. This is one of the event's sponsors. Sean, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Rami. Nice to be here.
So to start, Sean, can you tell us what inspired the Jewish-Palestinian Alliance of Oregon to co-sponsor this event?
We're not really into putting on concerts, but one of our members, just looking at all the atrocities that have been happening over the past 19, 20 months now, just stood up and said, we got to do something. And I was thinking about a benefit concert. And we kind of all looked at each other and said, well, you know, those things are expensive. You know, how are we going to pull it off? How is it going to happen? But I kind of threw my hand up in the air and said, you know, I would like to help on this. And then just we started throwing some ideas. And if it wasn't for the generous, basically, time of the people, the people who are headlining the show, starting with Safarin, an internationally renowned music group. I encourage everybody to go listen to their music at Safarin.com, SefFarine.com. They donated their time and they said we'd be glad to do it. And so they're, you know, right there, you know, from a financial aspect, it started to look like, okay, this can happen. And then through contacts, we were able to connect with Amr Zahar, a Palestinian activist, comedian, well-known within the Middle Eastern community and broader. He does everything. He's all over the place on social media, doing tours and things like that. He also donated his time, and he said he would be glad to do it because both of those folks, the group and Amr, they believe in the cause. And so right there, that was the beginning. It was like, okay, well, we might have something. And then we started looking at venues, and the huge thanks to the First Unitarian Church in downtown Portland. They basically provided us with a venue that seats upwards of 550 people relatively at no cost. And so all of a sudden it started to become more real, and we thought, okay, you know, we might have something. And that's how it was really just an idea, and it became a reality just from the generous donation of all those folks. You know, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have it.
That's amazing. So this lineup, it includes Sefarin and Amr Zahar, you know, and as you said, they're two very different but very powerful artists. So what can the attendees expect from this evening's performances?
That's a really, really good question, Rami. And I don't know exactly, but I have like this vision in my head that it's going to be a mix of laughter and tears and just soulful music that warms the heart, all sort of weaved into for a good cause. I think I'm hoping, and I can see it, that people are going to walk out of the event feeling that feeling that they have had a good night event where they laughed and cried and stood in solidarity for a really good cause, which is supporting the Palestinian Children Relief Fund. This is an organization that has been around for 30 plus years, donated millions and millions and millions of or fundraised, I should say, and contributed millions of dollars for life-saving treatments and for children, amputees. Right now, it is well known that in Gaza, the number of amputee children is the highest in the world. And that's just in less than 24 months. I mean, if we could even fathom that. And so all the funds are going to go to that. And I'm hoping that people are going to understand that they're buying the ticket and contributing to this cause is going to be something that's going to make them feel good. So that's my hope.
That's awesome. Well, you answered my next question. I was going to ask you why PCRF was chosen, but I think you did a really good job of answering that. How does this event align with the broader mission and values of the Jewish Palestinian Alliance of Oregon? Can you tell us a little bit about this group? Because you don't hear about Jewish Palestinian alliances every day.
Yes, and thank you for the question again, Rami. The Jewish Palestinian Alliance has actually been around for a few years, but naturally, due to the events of the genocide that's going on in Gaza right now, we sort of obviously sat there and we're all triggered, and so we wanted to do something, and the work has always been to dispel the myth that Palestinians and Jews, or Arabs and Jews, or Muslims and Jews can't come together. And that is just simply not true. For thousands of years, we have lived in peace, as neighbors, as equals. And so our work is really focused on educating the public and show a different narrative than what is commonly portrayed in the media.
In such a heavy time globally, especially in Gaza, how do you see music and comedy playing a role in healing and resistance?
Ah, that's another really good question, Rami. I mean, look, for me personally, I'll speak from a personal perspective on this. Again, as the after October 7th and with the brutal attack of the Israeli IDF and Israeli government, I mean, you saw on social media the numbers of videos and posts and things like that from every artist that you can imagine. And for me personally, when you see a good piece of art, whether it's comedy or music or painting or any kind of art, it hits different. I don't know about you, Rami, but that's how it felt to me. And people can relate much easier than, say, reading a news article and reading numbers about what is going on. It humanizes people. It shows people are the same. We all have aspirations, and we all have how should I say this? We're all people in all aspect, you know, the spiritual, the artistic, the rational side of you. It all comes through art, and in this instance, we're showing two different things, or we're going to be showing two different things. But at the end of the day, it's the relation on the human level that is going to touch people, and I see that happening in this event.
Love that. So you know, it's hard to imagine, but for people who might be new to this issue or unsure how to help, you know, what's your message to them, and why is showing up on May 30th so important?
Oh my gosh, there's just so much to say to that answer, Rami. But to start, people need to be informed. And as an American Palestinian, I tell all my fellow Americans, everybody that I run into, is I say, what's happening right now is not just a Palestinian Jewish thing. This is directly has an impact on your life. You know, without getting into the political aspect of things, but the erosion of our civil liberties, that's just not a Palestinian thing anymore. That they are the attacks and the silencing and the suppression in the media on what is happening right now is going to affect all of us. Whether you're Palestinian, whether you're American, whether you're Jewish, is going to affect you. And so it starts with really being informed, and not just being informed on the casualties and the numbers and everything, but just being informed on how our government is behaving over the past 2 years and how our government has supported a genocide. Those are the things that people need to learn. And then you can do something. You know, you don't have to just read the article or see the post and not do anything. You can do every little thing count. It really does. The only thing that has kept this Palestinian solidarity movement going is the numbers. This is a movement that's not funded. This is a movement that is grassroots on every level you can imagine. And if it wasn't for the numbers, if it wasn't for the people who have basically said, I can't stand for this, and whether they donated $10 to a fund or whether they went on a protest or, in this case, attended a concert and stood in solidarity on an event, such as the one that we're putting together, all of these things make a difference. We just got to keep it sustainable, and we got to keep the message alive. And it's a message of needing peace, ending of the occupation, and basically equality for all. I think these are shared human values and American values.
All right. Hey, Sean, thank you so much for your time. So this event will be Friday, May 30th at 7:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, benefit concert for people of Gaza, music duo Sepharin, and comedian and activist Amir Zahr. Sean, thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.